Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of The Savage Nation.
Playing the pipes for the slain NYPD officers and all the others who have died in the race wars, stirred up by the most racially divisive administration this country has ever seen. And if you think it's a joke, keep on laughing. Because the police, the thin blue line, are all that stands between you and them. Alleged Muslim Brotherhood front groups such as the Council on American-Islamic Relations, CARE, have played a role in organizing the anti-police protests in major U.S. cities. Did you know that? Did you know any of this? NYPD assassin held radical Islamic views, may have attended same mosque as AQ fundraiser, World Trade Center bomber. Did you know any of that? Did you know that it's connected to the major groups? Well, the article is on Breitbart.com. They make their points and they have facts to back it up. Alleged Muslim Brotherhood groups, such as the Council on American-Islamic Relations, have played a key role in organizing the anti-police protests in major U.S. cities. Now, have you noticed mixed in with these Ferguson protesters have been jihadists with the scarves, Palestinians? Have you noticed that? You're listening to the Savage Nation on a very, very troubled day. I've been agitated since Saturday when this news first came out. I was out of town and I couldn't wait to get on the air, and I had to think very carefully about who did this and was there a terrorist connection. Well, we found out that the cops were killed by a Muslim jihadist, Ismail Brinsley. The minute I saw his first name, I knew there was a connection to jihad. Ismail Brinsley. According to Walid Shubat, who reads Arabic, he has two Muslim names, Ismail and the middle name Abdullah, which means servant of Allah. He is a fan of Sheikh Yusuf Estes, who is not only neck-deep in the Muslim Dawah movement, the call to convert Westerners to Islam, but he meets with both ISIS and Hamas financiers. And the murderer, the cop killer, loved the Quran, specifically Surah 8 on his own Facebook page, which called for arming for preparation for jihad war. So you want to know a motive of why Brinsley shot the two NYPD officers? Do you want to know why? Brinsley is apparently a jihad sympathizer, at least he was, who used the racial turmoil stirred up by Obama and Holder and Sharpton as an excuse to kill Americans. Now, I want to play for you something that you should never forget, because the worst of them all is the president, of course. You well know that. None of this would be happening if the leader didn't want it to happen. That's why he has that slimy Sharpton in and out of the White House for these 6 years. They're working on the same page book. And so let's not forget what the fraudulent civil rights faker Sharpton actually said over the last few weeks. Let's hear clip number 7 from the suddenly peaceful little con man.
The fight ain't over. And you don't judge the fight on one round. Even if we get knocked down, we get up and go to the corner and come out fighting the next round. You won the first round, Mr. Prosecutor, but don't cut your gloves off. Because the fight's not over. Justice will come.
Fight's not over, you con man, you. You con man, you. How Phil Griffin should be ashamed of himself. Phil Griffin is slimier than Al Sharpton. Phil Griffin is the secret hand behind NBC. Phil Griffin is the slime ball who lets this race monger have a show on the most despicable of television stations, MSNBC. So if you think this is happening in a vacuum, you are mistaken. It's a seamless connection between the most racially insensitive and incendiary administration since the Civil War and the media, the government media complex. And when I come back, we'll continue to talk about who is responsible for the assassination of the cops, not only in New York, but in Florida. There was another incident an hour ago here in San Francisco, in the San Francisco area, where I broadcast from, up in Humboldt County, where a California highway patrolman was attacked by a youth with a machete and had to shoot the youth dead. Where's Al Sharpton? Is he on an express train to Humboldt? Think about the garbage that is fed to impressionable young men and women by this administration, and then recall the Square George soldiers that for decades on recruitment posters successfully encouraged men and some women to join the armed services. What do you think the recruitment posters of the near future will look like? The attack on our nation is going on around the clock, and the snake is Obama. The head snake is Obama, the man on vacation in Hawaii. Now, we have sound bites, so de Blasio, the sneak, cannot hide. So Sharpton, the snake, cannot hide behind his new entourage of haters and make believe he's Mr. Peace. He is the most incendiary piece of garbage the American people have ever had to put up with, that phony garbage. How did he get where he is? How does a rat from the gutters who has done so much damage to this nation rise to such prominence at a time like this? How does a rat like that go in and out of the White House without anyone in the media saying a word? How? You figure out how. Sharpton is America. Sharpton is the Obama voice. You say, whoa, Sharpton? He's not Sharpton. He's Obama. He's Holder. He's the street thug. He says what Obama and Holder want him to say. That's what they were having him in the White House for. Did he want police killed? Oh, no, he didn't. He's a man of peace. He's a civil rights leader. He's gotten where he is because he's such a fine reverend. No one knows where he got his reverend's degree. I bet people on the show many times I pay $100 to anyone who could produce the divinity degree that this con man has earned. I've never gotten it. So let's go back in time and play some of the sound so they can't reinvent history. We have archived audio where you will see Obama, Sharpton, Holder, Jesse High Jackson, and de Blasio were stirring up racial hatred and trying to take out the white police force. What's ironic here is that the jihadist who executed those two cops executed an Asian and an Hispanic. Did you know that? Now, there are many other incidents not being reported all over the country. A cop in Florida was killed yesterday. Many, many incidents like this, all because of the racial hatred coming out of the White House and their street thugs, in my opinion. I could ask you a question, which I will do. Who do you most blame for the cop killings? There's a lot of blame to go around. Who do you most blame for the execution of these police? Well, let's start with the mayor of New York City, the second most important political position in the country. And let's start with clip 31, the one everyone remembers that de Blasio wishes to God would go away right now in the Savage Nation.
We've had to literally train him, as families have all over this city for decades, in how to take special care in any encounter he has with the police officers who are there to protect him. And that painful sense of contradiction that our young people see first, that our police are here to protect us and we honor that, and at the same time, there's a history we have to overcome because for so many of our young people, there's a fear.
And then in 32, he goes on and attacks the police.
And for so many of our families, there's a fear. So I've had to worry over the years. Shirlane's had to worry. Was Dante safe each night? There are so many families in this city who feel that each and every night. Is my child safe? And not just from some of the painful reality of crime and violence in some of our neighborhoods, but are they safe from the very people they want to have faith in as their protectors? That's the reality.
So this snake de Blasio, who everyone who can read, anyone with higher than an 80 IQ knows, is a stone-hearted Marxist, a supporter of the Sandinistas, has gotten just what he wanted, in my opinion. He stirred the pot. He said the police are racist. And then Holder moved in and said, we're going to retrain the police across America because they're white racist pigs. Oh, he didn't say white racist pigs. He's too slick for that. But the wink and the nod said that. And so guess what just happened? There's a war on the police across America. There are three dead now that we know of in the last 3 days. And the police now are intimidated. They're being told, make sure the other guy shoots you first. The new rules of engagement for the cops are, it's better we have a dead cop than a dead terrorist. Same as in the military. The whole world is upside down because the world is being run by people with upside down brains. The top of it all is Holder and Obama. Remember when they said they were going to target racial profiling? Remember when Holder said that they're an occupying force? That was a wink and a nod. Listen to clip six.
Our police officers cannot be and cannot be seen as an occupying force disconnected to the communities that they serve.
So he's created the situation of that people of color are Palestinians and all police are now the Israelis. That's what Holder did. Now let's go to clip number eight, and here's the thug himself. The thug himself, who's much less smooth, but the same message as Holder.
This is a national crisis. It is a national problem. A few of us in the civil rights leadership met with the president and the vice president on this on Monday. We cannot just go from episode to episode, city to city. There must be a national response. The federal government must come in and intervene on the issues of criminal justice and policing.
So this uneducated pile of offal is now advising Sony Pictures on what they can produce. This pile of offal has been advising the president on how to divide the races. What's next? Will this pile of offal now advise the police on how they can do their police work? How does a nation devolve so rapidly? How does it fall so rapidly? You all forget there was an election 6 weeks ago where the policies of hatred and racism were rejected at the ballot box. The very next day, the con man in chief got up there, walked out, and said basically there was no election. I'll do what I want, because in the next election, we'll make sure that we get as many illegal aliens as we can and as many gangbangers as we can to vote as often as they can. So he laughed at you. He laughed at me. He laughed at we who vote and we who pay the taxes. This is just the beginning. This is not the end of the beginning of this race war, nor is it the beginning of the end of this race war. What happened in New York City is just one more example of the race war we are involved in this country that has been stirred up by Barack Obama and his minions. That's my opinion. It's one man's opinion. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. Now, there's another element to this that no one in the media has touched on. The man who murdered two police officers in Brooklyn is a Muslim jihadist, according to Waleed Shubat, who speaks Arabic, who has been in the show many times. I saw a link to this over the weekend, only a brief one, where the murderer, Brinsley, posted a Quranic verse, 860, from the Quran. The sacred Quran has a Quranic verse that he quoted on his Facebook page that says, strike terror into the hearts of the enemies of Allah. Now remember, the Global Muslim Brotherhood uses a segment of the same Quranic verse in its logo. Did you know that? Did you know that the Muslim Brotherhood movement seeks the installation of Islamic caliphate that follows Sharia laws? Did you know that? Now they know it very well in Egypt because they speak Arabic and they've dealt with the Muslim Brotherhood by arresting them. In this country, the Muslim Brotherhood is invited into the White House. So if you think that the killings of the police happened in a vacuum, you're crazy. This was the result of years of stirring up class warfare and race warfare. I found this race war predicted in a little-known book, a book not heard from. I was researching this horrible execution over the weekend. And here is what this little-known book stated. It stated this. It asked the question, will the Obama inner circle of extremist left-wing radicals trigger an event that will provoke an American insurrection, even a civil war? And then the author said, let me explain to you what is happening. The desperate Democrats are all pursuing policies of race and class warfare. As their failures and many deceits become clearer to the people, as the war they're fighting against the freedoms promised in the U.S. Constitution materializes, they are counting on minority voters to turn out for them at the ballot box. And then this little-known book had excerpts from some of their speeches to high school and college graduates. And the book quoted Michelle Obama. The book quoted Eric Holder, one of the worst of the race haters the country's ever seen. And Holder is one of the smoothest of the race haters I've ever seen. He says it without saying it. He gives the signals without signaling. He winks without moving an eye. But there were others who fanned the flames of race warfare, including Nancy Pelosi. Nancy Pelosi called the children, the druggers, the drug addicts at UC Berkeley to arms, and she called them disruptors, and she celebrated their being disruptors. Here is one of the richest, most powerful women in the world stirring up the masses to attack and to incite violence, in my opinion. That's all on pages 2 to 5 of this little-known book. But this little-known book that would not be touched by the girls at Fox News has something even worse in the predictions, and that's this. The book talks about what the military is going through. You know what's going on in the police departments, where they're trying to push out white males from power positions and push in unqualified minorities as fast as they can. It's worse in the military. Page 44 of this little-known book. This administration's military policies include expanding the cultural Marxism that characterizes all its policies to include Christians in the military. Listen to one of the president's pet projects, which is the DOD's Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute. Now remember, the DEOMI, the Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, was formed way back in 1971 to help address racial inequality in the military. And from that admirable start, it has been changed into a leftist propaganda factory, promoting radical feminist issues and spreading anti-Christian directives while shredding the iconic image of our armed forces. Here is what Obama has done in the DEOMI. Here is the manual. I will quote it exactly so you'll know what's going to happen next in the military. Here is their quote. Simply put, a healthy white heterosexual Christian male receives many unearned advantages of social privilege, whereas a black homosexual atheist female in poor health receives many unearned disadvantages of social privilege. The manual in the military goes on and says, in spite of slave insurrections, civil war, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the women's suffrage movement leading to the 19th Amendment, the civil rights movement, urban rebellions, and the contemporary feminist movement, the white male's club persists. I want you to think about those statements.
Savage.
Box of pictures. Just open them because, like, I don't have family around the holidays. Everyone's somewhere else. Tonight's I'm alone with the dog in a dark house on a hill with a glass of scotch. It's fine. I don't care. What do I need relatives for to pick on me and ask me for money? What do I need it for? Christmas. Oh, everyone's happy. Christmas. Not me. I'm alone. Dog again. The restaurants will be closed. I won't know where to go. Get takeout, like a meatloaf, Italian meatloaf takeout, and watch reruns of The Sopranos and make believe. So I got the pictures out because, like, I lived through my mind anyway. So I'm going to go through family pictures now, do something never before attempted in the history of talk radio. I'm going to pull out pictures from this box, unscripted, and I'm going to rap on the pictures, the family pictures. First one, black and white, dad, circa 1950s, Catskill Mountains, in short, looks like Robert De Niro, bathing shorts in those days, like looks like tapa cloth, smiling, saying, what a nice picture. But you know what I remember is I wrote a story called Boy in the River in my book from last year, Train Tracks, Family Stories. And you say, like, oh, the good old days. So let me tell you the good old days. He's in the river smiling. But I wrote Boy in the River. What's Boy in the River about? He scared me to death in the river. It was a never-sink river, fast-flowing, went to a waterfall in South Fallsburg, New York. The thing went over a waterfall. I was afraid of it as a little kid, that I'd somehow get caught in the current, get swept over the waterfall and die. I'm not an Indian. I have no Mohawk in my blood, where they throw a kid over a waterfall to teach him to be tough. So my father put me in an inner tube. I don't know. I was 3, 4. How do I know? And he said, I'm going to push you over the waterfall. I didn't understand which way current ran. And he pushed me against the current. I thought he was pushing me with the current to go over the waterfall. So he pushed me upriver, and I would start to cry. And he liked that I cried. He got a kick out of it. That's very nice. Very nice story looking back. Thanks, Dad. Hope you're enjoying heaven. I'm not trying to expose anything about it. I'm just saying. Now, either it made me tougher, or I have issues with intimacy and trust, for sure. Absolutely. I trust nobody on earth. Everyone is my father pushing me upstream. Everyone that I approach is about to push me over a waterfall. Over a waterfall. No, it's amazing how I've survived when you consider all the things that were done. You know, like crap like that? Are you kidding? I never did that to my kids. I made a decision as a result of that upbringing that I would never do that to my children. I don't know if I succeeded. They probably hate me anyway. What do I know? No matter what you do, it works out the wrong way with kids. You got to understand that. No one likes you. You do the right thing, they say it's the wrong thing. You try to help them too much, you're meddling. Try to give them a gift, I don't need it. Then if you're the parent who gives them nothing, they hate you for not giving you anything. How because stingy is cheap. So you get the other one, I don't want it. What are you trying to buy my love? Merry Christmas. Play Merry Christmas again.
Merry Christmas, baby. Sure did.
I had my Elvis pants. I put them in the Savage Museum. All right, turn it off already. I'm all over the map. My head's everywhere. Maybe I have ADD at my age. I don't know. I probably had it as a kid. If I was a kid today, I wouldn't have stood a chance. I would have wound up a dentist playing the accordion and be dead by now. Nothing against dentistry, but the thing is this. With my personality and my brain, if I was a kid today, first grade medication, 5 different illnesses, 12 different medicines. So all my creativity would have been quelled and destroyed. And I wouldn't be on the radio. I wouldn't have written 30 books. I wouldn't have earned a PhD and 2 master's degrees. I wouldn't have written such great poetry. I wouldn't be painting. Nothing. I'd be nothing. I would have probably gone to dental school in Tijuana because I couldn't focus very well. I couldn't get into an American dental school. Probably would have gone to a dental school in Mexico, then come back and somehow finagled a license, opened a practice in Rigo Park as an assistant dentist. And I would have died of heartbreak by 43. I would have been 295 pounds and dead of a heart attack. But because I was a little off the standard line of thinking and the way I was, I always followed my own, you know, New York Times insider, multi-million-dollar shortfall causing drastic cuts. Vice Chairman Michael Golden, cousin of publisher Arthur Sulzberger Jr., enjoys a $2 million sinecure even as 100 journalists are let go. Journalists. Oh, that's a loaded word. Journalists of the New York Times. I love that one. But nevertheless, it's an interesting story, is that they're sucking the paper dry, the family. That's the article. There's the smiling Michael Golden, vice chairman of the New York Times company, earns about $2 million a year. Picture this guy's ego. Picture the whole day. I look at these guys living here. I just imagine what their life is like at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, you know, openings with bad ties and poor suits from Robert Hall, whatever. Bad dental work, poor shoes. They all have, like, skinny, pretty wives. That's the funny part. They all have to have skinny, pretty wives like museum wives. Their wives are as sterile as kitchens in Tiburon, California. Beautiful equipment, but they don't work. Gorgeous equipment, gorgeous appliances, but you can't turn them on. That's a good one, Robert, right? I finally hit the metaphor I was looking for. Give me a cymbal shot on that. Now, all these guys, they have, like, beautiful wives that don't work. That's a double. It's like the appliances in Great Neck, New York. Perfect kitchens that you can't turn them on. They're always doing takeout or going to restaurants because the women don't want to cook anymore. Enormous shortfall, as much as $50 million, according to this third, that must be closed immediately. The draconian cuts of 100 journalists. Somewhat spared the axe has been the Times business side, particularly Vice Chairman Michael Golden. His total comp hovers around $2 million, blah, blah, blah. What kind of car does he drive? Mr. Golden earned $1.976 in total comp for running the human resources and communications departments. Imagine what these people have done, sack the newspaper. What is this? It's not even great. Sorry. It's not like I'm glad that the New York Times is going out of business. It doesn't matter to me one way or the other. It's like it's an irrelevant newspaper. Everyone knows what it is. It's an arm of the White House. It's like the New York Magazine. It's like the New Yorker today. Sure, you have one or two good journalists left, mainly the journalist who wrote my profile. The rest aren't journalists. They're propagandists. They're really stenographers of the New York Times. $627,000 in salary, $763,000 in bonuses, $543,000 in stock, plus $46,200 from other types of comp. Probably has a driver, car, lives in a nice apartment. Wife is like an appliance that you can't turn on. And maybe a kid, could have a kid. I don't know, maybe he has a wife. I don't know anymore. My wife, the wife could be a boy. You don't know. I'm not saying him. I don't know. But today the word has no meaning. They introduced their husband. In L.A., he's like, hey, I'm Bob. Here's my husband. His name is Mike. I don't get that. Can you guys just say he's gay? I mean, why do you have to, my husband and wife, why do you have to confuse words? It's unbelievable to me. Can you imagine what this language would have done to your father or your grandfather? guy comes into a store, his name is Bob, and he says, I want you to meet my husband, Mac. No one understands this anymore. It's called the takeover of the language. It's the takeover by proxy. It's a Marxist trick. No, it was not taught by Saul Alinsky. Let's not give him credit for everything. Everyone says Saul Alinsky like he's really behind Obama. No one even knows who Alinsky is. He wrote a book called Fools for Radicals. Or was it Rules for Radicals? It was Fools for Radicals. Yeah, Fools for Radicals. The man behind Obama is not Saul Alinsky. It's Axelrod. Axelrod is the Rasputin of the Obama administration. No one knows that. Am I the only one who knows who Axelrod is? Axelrod is the Rasputin of the Obama administration. Nobody understands this. He's the smartest of them all. He is the brain. He's Obama's brain. Obama golfs and reads a teleprompter and gives speeches. But Rasputin writes the whole thing. The whole thing is written by him and orchestrated by him. Of course there's news. I'm sick of it. Aren't you sick of it around the holidays? How much can you take of it? Robert's saying yes. Everyone feels the same way. You know, a lot of you guys are fanatics. It's like sucking air into a tooth that has a hole in it. You like the headache you get from it. You keep doing it over. Ooh, what did Obama do now? Ooh, he did that? Wow. What Sharpton do now? How did he curse the human race? Ooh. The IRS did what? Ooh. I'm tired of sucking air into my, you know, I need a filling. I don't need air in it. What's this with Rupert Murdoch? Rupert Murdoch bought the Wall Street Journal from Bancroft's. The journal was vulnerable because in the opinion of some times, the Bancroft family no longer played an active manager. I don't get that. It's an opportunity to put Rupert. Why don't they just run a picture of the Koch brothers when they need a villain? Don't show a Muslim who just raped 30 women or threw them alive down a well. Always put the Koch brothers in like they're the worst people on the planet, you idiots. You wonder why your newspapers are going out of business? How can you explain that a guy like me, basically a one-man act, has thrived for 20 years in the radio business? The answer is because you guys have failed at the New York Times. Because there's no journalism anymore. Don't you understand it? We all see you for what you are, stenographers and propagandists. So when a guy like me gets up there and speaks right out of the heart, people will listen. So I'm going to go back to memories of the good old days that never were. If you'd like to listen to one of the Carney Barkers in the conservative side, go ahead. You can listen to the Carney Barkers all day long. Who give you the everything's good, everything's wonderful, vote Republican. Come on. That's not my style. You know, if you don't like the show, I can't help it. I mean, I hope you do. After all, it's a program. It's a show. So I went through the father, brother in a wheelchair. Poor Jerome. Dirt lot in the Bronx. Filthy. Everyone threw garbage in the streets there. Everyone says, oh, when the white people lived there, it was clean. It wasn't. The sand lot was dirty. It was littered. Looking at it right now, I have evidence of it. Here is a picture across from 829 Longfellow Avenue. It has to be 1945, 6. It's disgusting. It's full of litter. There's a car even. I can see the ear of the car. It looks like Al Capone was in the neighborhood. There's a carriage with, like, underwear hanging from it. There's the women sitting outside on the curb in the chairs watching the children. And in the lot across the street, it's filthy, dirty. Everyone threw garbage in the street. Tires. There's lawn. It looks like Chinatown now. I didn't know that. You know why I like Chinatown in San Francisco? It must remind me of my childhood. Everywhere you turn, it's like underwear hanging out of a window. People think how quaint that is. So they don't have dryers and washing machines. They wash their clothes in the sink and they hang it in the window because they're poor. So I'm looking at this. They did the same thing on the fire escapes. They have laundry hanging on. So you say, where's the good old days? I didn't know it was poverty. Kids don't know poverty. If you got someone who gives you food, washes you once in a while, sends you to school, you're happy. You have friends to run around with. Okay, now we move up. Now we move up. There I am smoking a Galoisie. I must have just come back from Europe. It's at a catering hall. Oh, my mother was good looking. God. Wow. I thought I was with a date. That's my mother. Jeez. She was young, good looking. That's where I get my looks from. That is my mother. I can't believe it. I thought it was like a girl I was dating. No, she looked young. So I'm like in a Brooks Brothers suit, cigarette in my left hand, holding it like a Frenchman. I can't explain it. I don't mean that in a derogatory sense. It wasn't like between my two fingers. It was like held between my thumb and my first finger and hanging down like a Mr. Cool. I just came back from Paris. The hipster is back. Hair over my left eye. Tight, thin suit, Brooks Brothers. Perfect Windsor knot. Miserable as can be inside. Horrible. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282. Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from. SwissAmerica.com.
They weren't the marching with hate. There was no Al Sharpton, the race hater. How's that possible? We had a white president. There was less hatred in the country. I knew what I was doing, which is basically none news. If there's news, you'll get it. But you get the news in 3 seconds by going to the Drudge Report or any of the other sites, my site, which I'm not going to pump. Instead, I've been doing other things. I opened up a box of family pictures for a journal book that I'm publishing, and I started to rap on the family pictures, which was a risky thing, you know. I don't know if you liked it. I think it's interesting for you to see me slowly die on the radio over a period of time. I was reading, like, my lab report, and everything looks good because it's all still upside down. All of the lipids are bad. And the only thing I don't like about it is the PSA is going up, which I don't like. That's like a man thing. You know, every guy's worried about it. If it goes too high, you got to have the Schleicher cup. They got to take out the knife and give you a cut, and then next thing you know, you're finished. PSA 2.4, as long as it's down there. But I don't know, if it starts rising, it's like Bad Moon Rising. Yeah, Bad Moon Rising, it's a good song. Homocysteine, we don't do anymore. Does anyone read their lab reports like I do? I'm the only guy on radio who studies his ratings on each of 250, 300 stations. I study ratings. I'm a statistician. I have that training. I like numbers. I like to see what's going on. I read my lab results. I like to study numbers. Numbers are very interesting. It's like numerology. LDL is still horrible, upside down. And I don't take Lipitor. It just shows you. Because I inherited one factor which you cannot correct, which is LPA cholesterol. I keep telling you that. The LPA cholesterol cannot be modified with any drug or any vitamin. It's an inherited factor. And it's inversely related to atherosclerosis. So if you have a low LPA, bingo, you're home free. You can just do it. No, it's not 100% true, but it's one of the factors that people don't seem to know about. They don't test for it. Because I should have been dead. I shouldn't say that. I'm saying I thought I would be. There's a little like extra years to the detriment of all of the liberals who've tried to stand in my way my whole life. So here's a story that my friend Matt Drudge sent. Fatal heart attacks occur on Christmas more than any other day, I swear to God. I'm not surprised with the heavy food and the families and the drinking and the ornaments and the children and stepping on toys and plastic and one bathroom in a neighbor's house. I don't know. Is that why? It's become the norm for many of us, harried, hurried, and just plain old stress, blah, blah, blah. When he felt the largest artery in his body battered by high blood pressure and chronic stress tear. He said, it may be over with me. I don't want to read this. Air ambulance to Baylor's Heart Hospital, Plano, Texas. 5 weeks in a coma. 12 weeks of rehabilitation to learn. Why am I reading this? So the number one day for heart attacks is Christmas? Is that in this story here? I'm reading this whole thing about this guy, Mark. I don't care about Mark. Wait, fatal heart attacks occur on Christmas more than any other day. I'm reading this story about a guy, Mark. But where's the story about Christmas, the relationship? Where's the data on that statement? I don't see the data supporting that. Oh, here it goes. Researchers one decade ago found more fatal heart attacks occur on Christmas Day than any other day of the year. Why don't you blame Jesus for that? This is like a subtle attack on Christmas. So what, atheists get fewer heart attacks on Christmas because they hate God? Is that what I'm supposed to conclude? Everywhere you turn now is a propaganda story.
And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
Welcome to the Savage Nation. We are listening to some Cuban music from the era when it was great Cuban music, before the bearded one took over the island. It is Cachao, C-A-C-H-A-O, passed away at the age of 90. These musicians live long. I don't understand that they smoke, they drink rum, they run around, they're in clubs. The rum is being poured in the White House because they have finally gotten their way. And the question for you, the audience, is what's the big deal? The average American doesn't care about this normalization with Cuba that was done in the middle of the night. Like in all dictatorships, there is no Congress anymore. As in all dictatorships run by the thin man, being no difference. The dictatorship under the thin man is no different than other dictatorships in that he does everything in the secrecy of the night. Now, you could argue this is not such a bad thing, but if it's not such a bad thing, why did the sneak do it in the middle of the night? Why did he and the sneaky women who run America do this in the middle of the night? Why did he and the sneaky left-wing fanatics in Congress do this in the middle of the night? Why did he and the sneaks on the left do this in the middle of the night and not bring it before the open light of day? Why didn't they have an open discussion? The answer is because there are many elements to this normalization that we can only begin to discuss. We can't really understand. Some of them are clear. Some of them are not clear. The damage to the middle class, though, to me, is one that worries me deeply, because this is not good for the American middle class. It's very bad for the American middle class. Watch what happens. All of the undesirables of Cuba will be released as refugees and will be sent to the United States of America. They will empty the jails out, and we'll wind up with them as refugees in this country. Wait until you see what happens. If you think the Mariel Boatlift was bad, and in some cases it was pretty bad, as you know, he released political prisoners, but amongst them he also released very serious criminals into America. Watch what happens next. The Vatican's involved. That worries me, since the Pope is an Argentinian socialist. There are other elements of this story that need to be told, which is how they treat blacks in the Cuban government. As you well know, you would think that a socialist paradise like Cuba would have total freedom, they'd have total equality. Don't. There are almost no African Cubans in the leadership in Cuba, almost none whatsoever. They're extremely racist and very insular. You don't know that part of it, but again, that's a subtext that you should know about. There are other elements that will come out, which I think that this is the road to releasing all the terrorists from Guantanamo, because if you know the basics of geography, you know that Guantanamo is on the island of Cuba. So this is definitely something to do with Guantanamo and releasing all the terrorists, because Obama's wanted to do this from the get-go. He's wanted the terrorists released from Guantanamo. The next step will probably be normalizing relations with Iran. They will get a nuclear weapon, and perhaps, God forbid, relations with North Korea will be normalized. And then, of course, the final coup will be a knife in the heart of Israel, where they will be sanctions imposed on Israel. He will have turned the whole world upside down, not for the betterment of the world, but for the goals and perspectives of the far left, the myopic left that are running this country. The hardliners are saying this is a sellout. The hardliners are accusing Obama of rewarding bad behavior, which is nothing new. What's new about that? In my last book I wrote, he treats our enemies like friends and our friends like enemies. So this is part of his normal pattern. Some Republican lawmakers, Menendez of New Jersey, Democrat, Rubio of Florida, push back against the decision to enact a series of executive orders meant to normalize relations with Cuba, including asking Congress to ease or end the embargo. Florida Senator Marco Rubio, who I've never been impressed with, called it another concession to tyranny. I frankly think this was Rubio's finest moment. I was never impressed with Rubio, but I thought his speech was very heartfelt and extremely important. But I want to play Rubio in a minute, but I want to introduce another aspect of this entire story, which is, what effect will this have on the voting population in the United States of America, namely in Florida, where Jeb Bush is making machinations to run? The fact of the matter is, Jeb Bush is a clear Democrat or Republican. He stands for nothing except the Bush dynasty. How will this affect his candidacy? Because I would guarantee you that it will benefit Jeb Bush. Now, I want to go to Rubio. Let's hear clip number two.
It's ironic that a week after we imposed sanctions on human rights violators in Venezuela, we are lifting sanctions on the government that has taught the Venezuelans how to commit these human rights violations. It's absurd. And it's part of a long record of coddling dictators and tyrants that this administration has.
I think Marco Rubio has come up to his own in this situation. I mean, I've never been impressed with him. I always felt he was too... Whatever, it doesn't matter what I think about him. I think now he's showing a little different side of himself, because this is something close to home. I understand the hardline position that can be taken. However, I want to know the actual nefarious reasons for Obama doing this in the middle of the night. Why is he doing this? It had nothing to do with Alan Gross. I'm sure that they didn't cater to three rabbis who wanted Alan Gross released. Alan Gross worked for USAID, and I have, you know, between me and you, AID is a front group for spying. I have to clear the air, you know, and say what I know to be, you know, I'm glad Alan Gross is free, but you don't change U.S. policy for one spy. They say he went there to bring the internet to a Jewish community. Again, a double cover.
Well, the government of Cuba didn't want the internet because it would have meant the people would have been free to criticize the dictatorship of the Castro brothers. That's their policy. I don't agree with it, but that's their policy. So you got arrested. So right away they had to bring in a guy with a yarmulke today to say how wonderful this is, which made my flesh crawl. Why must everything be surrounding the Jewish? Why? What is it about Alan Gross? It made my flesh crawl. Why a rabbi? What did he have to do with this? Nothing. Something else is going on, especially when the communist pope, the Marxist pope, is involved. There's something for the Vatican in this, and there's something more at play in this. There's a much bigger policy, and I'd like to know what it is. I'd like to know what it is. There's something bad for America here. In other words, for the sorority that runs America to do this, there has to be something disastrous for the middle class in this country. You know, I'm looking at this guy and the pictures of him in the Daily Mail, and I see a picture of the Battle of Valley Forge in the Oval Office. I see a white alabaster bust of George Washington and of Ben Franklin. And I'm asking how long it'll be until we wake up one day and these busts are removed, and instead there are busts of Al Sharpton with a megaphone screaming for Freddy's Fashion Mart to catch on fire. Or perhaps a bust on the right instead of a Ben Franklin, a bust of Jesse Jackson with a little quote over him in bold letters saying, calling New York Hymie Town. And instead of the Battle of Valley Forge behind Obama, we find the oil painting was thrown out in the garbage. And he had a new oil painting commissioned in the middle of the night through executive order, the Battle of Ferguson, Missouri. I don't know when that might happen. Perhaps the Stars and Stripes themselves can be removed and replaced with, let us say, the rainbow flag. Anything is possible under this petty dictatorship because there is no opposition party, as you well know, and certainly there's no opposition press. Now, remember my main point, which is perplexing to me. My main point is, on the face of it, if you were, let us say you're a girl who goes to Columbia University and you were raised on Adderall or Ritalin, and you really don't know anything. Your parents were somewhat liberal or outright red diaper doper babies, and you grew up in New York City, and your attitudes are that of classic liberalism. You would say, hey, what's wrong with this? How do we lose by this? And you don't really understand the context of this or what it really means. And on the face of it, young people really don't even know what it is about Cuba that the older folks care so much about. And that's an interesting situation. Remember, let's go to South America. Chavez, who is now dead. Chavez destroyed the middle class in his nation. Chavez destroyed the middle class in Venezuela. Chavez and his policies are being duplicated by Obama and the sorority that runs America. They're going after the middle class at the, in the same way, albeit as, at a slower pace. But they decimated the middle class. Castro wiped out the middle class. There's only the ruling Communist Party elite. There are so many things about Castro's communism that you should know that are very important. First of all, although they allege to be non-racist, the Castros, as you well know, are Europeans in origin. They are not of the African origin, as many Cubans are. Some of the greatest musicians were of Afro-Cuban descent. But the fact of the matter is, they have a very, very low percentage of Africans in the Cuban ruling elite. Did you know that? Despite the lies of the communists who run Cuba, there are almost no blacks in the leadership. That's number one. There are many things you have to know about Cuba, including the fact that gays are quarantined who have AIDS. I think that is still true. Do a fact check on it. They're notoriously homophobic. They have quarantined gays with AIDS on a separate island for many decades. Did you know that as well about your friend Castro? There are things that are worth discussing that are somewhat of the subtext, but sometimes the devil is in the details. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, our Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com. The only company I trust for wealth insurance, gold and silver. Call 800-BUY-COIN. What's interesting here is that Obama has alienated Russia, starting a third world war with Russia, while reaching out to Cuba. This is an example of the myopic thinking of the girls who are running his administration. The girls from Harvard, the girls from Columbia, the girls from Chicago are running this country off the rails. We are pushing Russia to war, and we are now embracing Cuba. And what will happen next? We don't know under this dictatorship. We don't know what the girls' choir is liable to do next. Are they going to lift sanctions on Iran and North Korea in a week or two while you're celebrating Christmas? Will they then impose sanctions on Israel? And what will happen then? Will he reverse the world order to an extent that you don't even know what's going on? Welcome to the Savage Nation. To me, the big topic is Cuba, Cuba, Cuba. What's interesting to me is that Obama reaches out to dictators in Cuba. He seems to want to reset relations with every dictatorship on the planet. And the only people he will not reach out to are the American people who despise him. The actual taxpaying American people despise this petty dictator who rules by memoranda. This came out that this group of girls that are running the country are so sneaky that instead of using executive orders where he could say, look, my number of executive orders are lower than that of Bush. Well, factually, that's correct. But he's using another tactic, which is he's writing memoranda which have the same effect as executive orders. And in that, he's exceeded that of the last five presidents, by the way. This is the sneak attack by the girls' choir who's running America. There are many elements to this Cuba thing, including the Pope. The Pope, as you well know, is, let us say, a Marxist sympathizer. That's well established by any educated individual. The Pope was the first non-European Pope selected in 1,200 years. Unto itself, that was unusual. And then they picked someone who grew up in the era of communism in the country from which he came. The man has sympathies of Marxism at every turn, and he was working with the Cubans and the Americans for more than a year to make this happen. So the question is, why does the Vatican want relations with Cuba restored? That's one question. And I'm not so sure I have an answer to it. I can't figure it out. The second question is, why does he alienate Russia and push Russia into a corner and open up relationships with Cuba? That's the second question. But in order to do this rationally, we have to go back to the United States embargo against Cuba, which was introduced back in the 60s under JFK. And you don't know this, but JFK did this the same way Obama's doing it. He did it as an executive action. You may not know it, but Democrats are basically always dictators. The Democrat Party is the party not of the people, but the party of communism, the party of a dictatorship. The Cuban embargo is in effect, by the way. And the reason it was in effect, and it's been a complete failure, incidentally, the reason it was put in effect was an attempt to make these merciless dictators, the Castro brothers, somewhat ease their grip on the Cuban people who live in terror. They live in a reign of terror. The secret police operate around the clock, etc. The question is this better for America? That's all I care about. I don't really know. Is this going to be better for America or worse for America? I don't really know. Now, there are principled conservatives who are hardline on this who say, no, you can't do it. Rubio gave, I think, the first good speech of his entire life as to why this embargo, as it were, should not have been lifted. Rubio actually looked good. He's not presidential material. He's a good senator, and that's about it. But he gave a very good speech. Menendez, a Democrat from New Jersey, of all people, came out against the president's action. That's interesting unto itself. Look, my theory, as I expressed in Stop the Coming Civil War, is that there's been a worldwide Marxist revolution in the entire world. The Pope is a Marxist. Obama is a Marxist. De Blasio in New York is a Marxist. The president of France is a Marxist. Go around the world and see what's going on. The puppeteers running the world have carefully implanted Marxists everywhere. We are moving towards worldwide dictatorship, worldwide communism. And that's why he's trying to make nice with Cuba. It really isn't a black and white issue. That's why I'm somewhat ambivalent on this issue. Knowing Obama's instincts, I know that there's some nefarious reason for this sudden change of policy, which he did by fiat in the middle of the night, again, without consulting Congress. This is how this dictator acts. Before rushing off to Hawaii on his three-week vacation, he does a thing like this. What is he saying to the American people? Screw you again? What is he saying to Congress? Drop dead again? Unto itself, it's an insult to the American way of life. He is showing that he's just like the Castros in that regard. On the other hand, this is probably going to be good for the Cuban people, wouldn't you say? Both of the Castros are extremely old. They're octogenarians. They're both ill. They're not going to be around much longer. Perhaps this will usher in a wave of reform in Cuba in an inadvertent manner. That's what I'm hoping for. I now want to turn the show to the domestic politics in America. Remember, Obama was just roundly rejected at the polls. It was all about him. The American voter hates him. The actual American voter who works for a living hates Obama. They hate the far left. They went to the polls, meaning my audience, and they said, no, yet you're finished. We don't want you. And he came back and he moved as far to the left as imagined. He went as far left, further left than you could ever imagine. Unlike Bill Clinton, who was a skilled politician, who after getting beaten in the midterms moved to the center, this one moved to the far left. So this is all part and parcel of that continuous tripling down on his left-wing fanaticism. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you that I have an entire chapter on what we must do to save ourselves in Stop the Coming Civil War. I can't think of a better gift than my book, Stop the Coming Civil War. Will it make me richer? No. Will I buy a new car as a result? No. Will I buy a new house as a result? No. What might you buying that book do? It might awaken one person.
Savage.
They're wearing a usher's uniform from the CDC with epaulettes. Doesn't mean he knows what he's talking about. They're paid spokesmen for the government, which is directly tied to the pharmaceutical industry. In some cases, it can be wonderful. By the way, I'm not a proponent of avoiding all pharmaceuticals by any means. I want you to understand that. I think Western medicine is the most miraculous form of medicine on the planet. I'm talking specifically tonight about vaccines. I'm a big vitamin taker, a big herbal guy, wrote books on herbal medicine, homeopathy, botanicals I know a lot about. But on the other hand, I've used an awful lot of life-saving regular medicines. Flu vaccine? No, I wouldn't take it. And there's a couple of reasons. The reasons are quite simple. They have to guess, first of all, what the vaccine should be made of. So they choose 3 to 5 strains of influenza A out of 250-plus strains, right? And if they don't guess the right one, you're going to get sick. So you're putting your faith in the CDC's ability to guess the one that might be a pandemic. So what did they do this year? They guessed right on 2 of the strains and wrong on 1 of the strains. So the flu vaccine is rather ineffective. Now, on the other hand, people say, which risk would you rather take? 1 in 1 million of a side effect or 1 in 10,000 risk of being hospitalized or dying? So they say take the flu vaccine, and many of you did. I believe the risks of the flu shot, on the other hand, the risks outweigh any benefit. Formaldehyde is in the common flu shot. It's a known carcinogen. Another ingredient in the flu shot is a mercury-containing compound called thimerosal, which impairs neurological and immune systems. There are also detergents, antibiotics, chemicals, and allergens like polysorbate 80 that causes infertility, including other ingredients that are unsafe for human consumption. In fact, the CDC itself lists some of these ingredients on its own website, but they will then say, quote, there is no evidence of harm caused by the small amounts of thimerosal and flu vaccine. I'm not convinced, though. You may say, well, I took the shot and the flu didn't kill me. But when you're older and you get ALS or Alzheimer's disease or MS, or you watch your kid develop seizures, or your kid becomes autistic, God forbid, what are you going to say? Are you going to say it's related to the small amounts of mercury and other contaminants, or preservatives, rather, and such, in the flu vaccine? You don't know that. But why increase the chances of inducing such illnesses in yourself and your children? That's a big question. It's one you're going to have to make up for yourself. It's easy to just go along with the program. It's easy to go along with the government program. But I'll ask you a question. Did Harry Reid get a flu shot? Did Barack Obama take a flu shot? Did Barack Obama's lovely family take a flu shot? Did Joe Biden take a flu shot? Who took a flu shot in the government? Would you know? Which of the Mandarins took the flu shot? Which of the Mandarins took the flu shot? For years, I've been calling for drug testing, mandatory drug testing for all of our public servants. Because most of the things they're doing indicate that they're using high amounts of prescription drugs and high amounts of illegal substances. They're crazy. Most of them are nuts. They're like drug addicts, like Hitler was. They're not Hitler, but the entire Nazi regime was on drugs. So why should we assume that this government's not on drugs? Now, that's a separate story, but it's tied into this. And now that I have your attention, we'll say it again. You go to work for a corporation, you have to pee in a cup. They're running the corporation called the United States of America, and they don't pee in a cup. And their decisions look like they're on drugs. So let's go back now to the issue at hand. We won't deal with the other one right now. It's too embarrassing to even contemplate what I just said. Vaccination. Let's look at vaccination. Vaccination coverage among the elderly. Remember, most of the people who get the flu and die are over 70. Did you know that? Most of the people who get the flu and die are over 70. That's the group over 70 that accounts for three-fourths of all flu deaths, right? So has it prevented death in that population? I'll give you an actual article from the American Journal of Respiratory Critical Care Medicine from 2008, legitimate journal. Vaccination coverage among the elderly increased from 15% in 1980 to 65% of people of the elderly. 1980, 15% were getting the vaccine. By 2008, 65% got the vaccine. It's probably much higher now. And the results? No decrease in deaths from influenza and pneumonia. As one vaccine researcher wrote, I think the evidence base for mortality benefits from flu shots we have learned is not valid. That's in Lancet Infectious Diseases from 2007. How about young children? Also a lack of evidence that young children benefit from flu shots. A review of 51 studies involving 260,000 children ages 6 to 23 months found no evidence that the flu vaccine is any more effective than a placebo. Did you hear that one? I have the reference if you want it. The fact of the matter is, no randomized trials show that flu shots reduce mortality from influenza or flu-related pneumonia. Now, some studies do show that the flu vaccine is somewhat effective in preventing influenza. That's on the other side. I didn't say it doesn't. It will reduce the relative risk of contracting influenza by a seemingly impressive 50%. But you're getting an awful lot of risk in doing so. And you have to evaluate that. Do you know how vaccine makers grow the virus? Well, they grow the virus in fertilized chicken eggs. Did you know that? With 500,000 eggs per day for up to 8 months. And what do they use to inactivate the virus? Formaldehyde, which is a known cancer-causing agent. Aluminum is then added to the mixture to promote an antibody response. Aluminum is a neurotoxin that may play a role in Alzheimer's disease. For a few years, I was director of the Alzheimer's Research Institute. I never talk about it. I was deeply involved in the nightmare of aluminum and its relationship to Alzheimer's disease. In fact, you can check the literature. I wrote a popular book called Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. I don't know the year, 2001. I don't remember. It was way before radio. No, it couldn't be 01. I don't remember the year. I don't. I started in radio in 94, so it had to be in the 90s. Yeah, it was in the 90s. I was interested in Alzheimer's disease, set up an institute, ran it, and I wrote a book, Reducing the Risk of Alzheimer's. It was a fascinating couple of years for me. I decided to reduce or eliminate aluminum in all forms in my life after that because aluminum was, in my mind, related to the lesions that develop and related to the lesions that are associated with Alzheimer's disease. Well, there's aluminum in that as well. There are other additives that I won't scare you with. There are other antibiotics that are in there. Did you know that? Neomycin, streptomycin, and gentamicin that can cause allergic reactions in some people. Did you know that? And then the mercury. And the mercury's in there. So as I say, you know, buyer beware. Don't just run into it because the government media complex tells you that you must have it. It's good for you. I'm trying to give you the other side of the story. Let's put it to you that way. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now. 855-400-SAVAGE. 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. Now, interestingly enough, do you even know if you have the flu? What's the difference between influenza and a cold? What's the difference between influenza and a very bad cold? Does anyone really know the difference? About 4 weeks ago, I've been very healthy, you know, by and large. Lucky. I massively dosed myself with vitamins. I have my whole adult life. But I got sick about 4 or 5 weeks ago. I know when it happened. And I couldn't kick this cold. It just wouldn't. It started with a post-nasal drip. Then it was this. Then it was that. I went on the air anyway. I didn't miss one day. It's the way I am. But I was in bed most of the time. Wiped out, exhausted. Couldn't, you know, like just wiped out. But it wasn't the flu. I had no fever. It was a very severe head cold. But I prevented it from going, you know, deeper into my body with massive. I increased my dose of ascorbic acid, meaning vitamin C, from my normal 1 gram a day, which is 1,000 milligrams, to, I don't know, 10 grams, 15 grams. And I've told you before that vitamin C is perhaps the most potent antiviral that you can get. And the reason you are hearing it doesn't work is because the people who are telling you that work for clinics and are in bed with the pharmaceutical companies that do not want you to have any self, any control over your own health. Let me give you an example of why it may not be working for you. I don't want to get sidetracked into the vitamin C story, but it's a very important one. I can go on for it, on this for 1 hour. Most of the studies that say vitamin C is ineffective are conducted with too low a dosage of vitamin C and inactive vitamin C. They don't even know it. But unless you're taking sufficient doses of vitamin C, it's not going to be effective. Moreover, most of you say, you know, I took vitamin C and it did nothing for me. Why? Because the vitamin C you have is probably in a pill form that you bought in the drugstore, and it's inactive. It has no activity whatsoever. And you're only taking 500 milligrams, which is a half a gram, which has almost no effect whatsoever. So what do you need to take? Well, you have to go to the store that sells it in a crystal form. Crystal vitamin C. I get it myself from a store here. I think you may know Trader Joe's in California. They don't advertise. They should. But that's where I buy a tub of it. And I take a half a teaspoon or a flat teaspoon a day. If I'm sick, I escalate it. And my friend, Dr. Bob Cathcart, who died about 3 years ago, was the genius of this field. Bob was a Stanford-trained MD. He was a surgeon by training. He was a doctors who fix broken joints. I can use some vitamin C right now. He had a practice up in Incline Village, Nevada, and he treated ski injuries largely. He was an orthopedic surgeon and one of the best in the country. In fact, he invented the Cathcart prosthesis, which was a great invention at the time. It was the ellipsoid hip joint. He was the first one to come up with that. And he noticed that as his patients were in the hospital in the Incline Village 30 years ago, those who were taking vitamin C while they were sick or even healing with broken bones would get better faster. That's how he came into the whole vitamin C field. And then he started to experiment with it, and he found out that vitamin C was literally a miracle cure. Well, he got tied up deeply with Linus Pauling, and he gave up his orthopedic medical practice, gave up surgery, and moved down to, I think, in the Menlo Park area, I forget exactly where, to strictly do a nutrition practice. And here's what he told everybody who came into his office. Some of you listening to this show in the San Francisco area may have been Bob's patients. He was the finest man I ever met. He was just an all-around great gentleman. I love the man. So anyway, he discovered that the sicker you are, the more vitamin C you can take without developing bowel intolerance. This is little understood by the medical profession, who continues to say, oh, it doesn't work. They don't understand there's a dose-related response to vitamin C. And so they give you too low a dose, and then they say it doesn't work. But if you took it in those dosages, it usually does work. And he found that the sicker you are, you can take more and more and more. So what does that mean? Bowel intolerance. It means this. If you're healthy and you're taking about a gram a day, you can take that 1,000 milligrams a day without developing bowel intolerance, meaning gas. But you'll find that the sicker you are, the more you can take without developing bowel intolerance. So suddenly, if you'd get bowel intolerance or gas after a gram of vitamin C, if you got a cold, you'll find you could take 8 grams, 9 grams, 10 grams, and you won't get any stomach churning, you won't get any bowel gas. So he says, keep titrating yourself till you do get bowel gas. That was his determinant of how much vitamin C you actually needed. Now, I've had friends call me and say they had the flu years ago. What should I do? They say, oh, I tried vitamin C, it didn't work. I said, get yourself a tub of vitamin C in one of the stores that sells it. And take a flat teaspoon of vitamin C in like grape juice. And take one dose of that every hour. They said, what are you, crazy? 4,000 milligrams an hour? I said, yes. Take it one flat teaspoon in juice every hour for 4 straight hours. Every one of them said it was like a miracle. Within 4 hours, they got on top of the flu. And then they kept taking it. And they found out that the healthier they were getting, then they were getting bowel intolerance. They were getting the gas, so you back it off. You back it off, and you go back to your maintenance dose when you're on top of it. Now, Cathcart treated illnesses like cat scratches, which are notoriously difficult to heal. And he found that even cat scratches healed much more rapidly if the patient was put on bowel tolerance doses of vitamin C. You could look him. I'm sure you can check the internet for Dr. Robert Cathcart III, MD, and look at his, some of the publications he did many years ago. He's completely forgotten. Completely and totally forgotten. Obscure. As is Linus Pauling. Why is Linus Pauling, one of the greatest minds of our time, forgotten? Because the pressures of the pharmaceutical industry are so great. And people are so lazy, they don't want to know how to do it. They actually don't even want to do this. It takes work. You know it takes work for you to actually treat yourself? Isn't it easy to stay home and say, I'm sick, and take antibiotics, which are absolutely contraindicated for the flu? Because the flu, as you know, is a viral infection. Antibiotics are, treat bacterial infections. And yet many people say, oh, I took an antibiotic, it did nothing. No, it'll make you worse. You take the antibiotic if you have a strep throat or something, which could be a side effect of a flu, but it's not what you're taking for the flu. So it brings us back to what treats a viral infection. The answer is very little, but your own immune system. How do you stimulate your immune system? With vitamin C. And here's another little something that Bob didn't know that I discovered in my many years. Vitamin A, one of the least understood of all vitamins with regard to illnesses. You cannot believe what a miracle vitamin A is, but it's a show for another time. I don't even want to do a health show. I wanted to stick to the politics of the vaccine because, as you can see, this is a passion of mine. I've studied it for 40 years. Does it make me the world expert? No, but I know enough about it to talk about it with some degree of intelligence and integrity. Who do you believe? Who do you believe? CBS, CNN, or Michael Savage? Who do you believe? Dr. Michael Savage, who spent 40 years in this field and has a PhD sufficient to understand the study. I didn't say that I'm the greatest genius on earth, but I can read the study. I guarantee the schmucks at CBS and CNN who wrote this article at the behest of the drug peddlers can't even read the study and understand it. So as I say, if you're a liberal, I would say, please do me a favor. Make my day. I want you to go to your vitamin chest. I want you to flush all of your vitamins down the toilet because I want you to believe CNN and CBS. They're worthless. The case is closed.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage. This is an encore presentation of The Savage Nation.
I saw a story about punishing children. An Eastern Tennessee father and stepmother of a five-year-old girl who died after being forced to drink large amounts of grape soda and water as a form of punishment have been sentenced to 35 years in prison. Randall Vaughn and Mary Vaughn pled guilty to second-degree murder and aggravated child neglect and were sentenced on Monday in Rogersville, Tennessee. You see, the Vaughns forced their daughter, Alexa Lindboom, I don't even know if it's their daughter, the girl, to drink more than a half a gallon of grape soda and water over 2 hours after they found she had consumed a soda or two they had told her were reserved for the adults, Armstrong said. The consumption of the large amount of liquid, Mayor Bloomberg, ex-Mayor Bloomberg, caused the girl's brain to swell. So it wasn't the soda that did it, Mayor Bloomberg. It was the large amount of liquid. So I suppose Mayor Bloomberg, who is now working for Obama behind the scenes, I guess, can now ban large amounts of liquid, and we can send out liquid police. But the issue is this. Do you punish your children? Do you still punish your children behind closed doors? Did you punish your children when you had young children? And it will lead to the biggest question of the day, which is, were you punished as a child and how were you punished? This is not going to be the whole show. There are many other topics. And the main topic is crime and punishment. To the liberal, there should be no consequences for any bad behavior. If the child smears feces on the wall when the child is an infant, they think it's an art form. And they take a picture of it and send it to the recruitment committee at Harvard University saying that a new Picasso has been born. The same liberals say there should be no death penalty. The same liberals say there should be no punishment. Hillary Clinton the other day said we should empathize with our enemy. This is how crazy liberalism is. So it comes back to punishment. How do you punish your children without hurting them? Do you punish your children anymore? And there are many methods of punishing children without hurting them. Now, Obama punishes America every day with his lies. for example, I'm going to play something for you that you will not believe. He went on another obscure television show, and he said that he's been discriminated against. Now, here is the president of the United States, the most powerful man in the world, and he's playing the race card and saying he's been Listen to clip one.
I think that if you look at the history of race in America, it's usually not a single moment when suddenly everything gets solved. It's a process. I think that
it's a liberal word.
Because of our policies, there's more equality than when I came in.
More equality. You know, Mr. Obama, I wrote something in the 80s called The Death of the White Male, and what I said in the first paragraph was, without quality, there can be no equality. Did you ever read that in your years at Columbia? I doubt it. I want you to now go on and listen to clip two from the Commander-in-Chief.
The folks who say there's not a lot of improvement, I don't think we're living in the 50s and remember what it was like to be black or Hispanic and interacting with the police then. They don't even remember what it was like 20 years ago. There has been improvement. The question is, what more do we need to do?
Now, in the next sound clip, get ready to gasp. Listen to number three.
Of course. Well, I think it would be pretty hard to grow up.
What did he say? Hold it. Stop. What did Ramos say? I didn't hear that. Have you been to play it again because it's inaudible. Let's hear it.
Of course. Well,
is he speaking English or Spanish?
Of course. Well, I think it'd be pretty hard to grow up in the United States of America without having any experiences of discrimination.
Oh, my God.
But what I do know is in my life.
Can you believe this? So far as I know, he didn't work as hard as I did, an immigrant son. I don't know that he was ever a busboy. I don't know that he was ever a soda jerk. I don't know that he ever worked in an ice cream factory. I don't know that he ever worked in his father's store, because I don't think they had stores in Kenya or in Indonesia, so far as I know. What do you mean he's been discriminated against? The skids have been greased for this guy from day one. So I'm not going to get worked up over an imaginary insult, because I'm not going to have a fake righteous indignation. But this is a form of mental torture that he's subjecting America to. But I want to move on to children. Now, how was I raised? Many people ask me, Savage, how did you become such a great man? How did you become such a success in radio and in the written word? How did you become a father and a family man, as flawed as you are in all of these fields, and no one's perfect? How did you do it? How do you keep going on? What motivates you? How did you start out? Were you born this way? Were you made this way? I would say that my father had a lot to do with who I am. And my rebellion against my father had even more to do with who I am. He was old school, European, immigrant guy. And as I was driving to the studio in the rain today, I thought back on my poor immigrant father and his circle of friends and how a man went broke as a contractor. You know, contractors then were not contractors today. They probably had no insurance. He talked about one of the men who had pulled himself up from immigrant status and became a small builder on Long Island and was building a house, one house. And he poured the concrete one night. He went home, and it rained that night. And he came in the morning, and all the concrete had been ruined. And he said the man's hair turned white overnight. Now, that story stuck with me my entire life. Of course, I don't know if it's true. I suspect it's true. But the story occurred to me today, or came back to me today, when I realized what fear immigrants lived with in those days, because there was no welfare state. There was just the law of survival. And that brings us to today. The reason most immigrants today are lazy, the reason most immigrants today come here to suck off the milk and honey that you and I produce and do nothing for this society, the reason Obama brings them in by the millions, most of whom don't work, and I'll prove that in 1 second. Yeah, I know, we see them doing the hard work, I get it. Meanwhile, at home, there's 5 children and a wife who does nothing, and they're living greatly on social services and being educated and medicated at your cost. So he's working for 15 or 20 bucks an hour, and the social cost is $70 to $100 an hour. So don't tell me they all come here to work. It's a net deficit. It's been studied. The reason that they can get away with it is because there's a welfare state. The reason they're not afraid of anything, and they don't motivate their children to go out and be the soda jerk or the child to go out and do other stuff, is because they don't have to. And that's why America is slowly dying. But that comes back to the issue of punishment. How were you punished? How were you punished as a child? I've yet to tell you how I was raised, and I was raised through the silent treatment. My father was rather, I'm sorry to say, look, he's deceased, God rest his soul, he did the best he could. I try to tell you, setting the stage, immigrant, poor, didn't really make it big in America, was a small shopkeeper, worried every day of his life that one day someone wouldn't, they wouldn't come in his store and he'd be out of business. He was the sole provider. I understand it. I understand it. So every meal I ate, he would say, yeah, you're living pretty good off the fat of the land. I didn't know what he was talking about. Every forkful I took, he made me guilty. You're eating pretty good. You're doing pretty good with the knife and fork. What he was saying was, is how come you didn't work for the food in his own way? What did I know as a fat little kid in Queens? I just continued to eat. I figured he was telling me a joke, but it was sadistic. And then when he really wanted to hurt me, if I did something, quote, wrong, he would give me the silent treatment for 2 or 3 days. I didn't even know. See, the silent treatment's the worst form of psychological torture you could impose upon a child. Believe me. And most women know that. That's why they do it to their husbands. No, that's a joke. The thing is, silent treatment is a very brutal form of psychological warfare on a family member. And it's vicious. It's cruel. And the lowest kind of mind engages in it, thinking that they're hurting people. They're only hurting themselves. Because I didn't even know what he was doing. I had no idea what he was. If I'd say, hey, Dad, what did I do? He would go with his finger to his mouth and shake his head. No, he'd shake his head no. So what did I do? Shake his head. Wouldn't even tell me what I did. So he was a little on a loon job. But it's why I went into talk radio, because now I can hang up on you. Now, I think about the psychological. I think about how we're made and what motivates us. But if I look back over my long life, I say, wait a minute. The silent treatment that I was raised on somehow brought me into public speaking, where I can control the audience, and I can control the responses of an audience, and I can control the dialogue, and I can cut the audience off when I don't want to hear them anymore. Like if they say anything I don't want to hear, I hit the kill button. So I'm very hard to live with as a result. But the fact is, it's worked for me my whole life. The dog likes me. That's all that matters. But I want to go back to the crime and punishment stories of the Savage Nation. And that's the how were you punished as a child? Because some of them are amazing. Sid, by the way, called in the middle of this because he was tortured in World War II. He wasn't talking about a child. A child's punishment. You know, we're hearing a lot about waterboarding. You want to hear what real torture is? Here's Sid on WABC. Sid, welcome to the Savage Nation.
I'm here. Time, even after all the torture, I was captured by 3 German soldiers, and they wanted to make me talk, and I wouldn't talk. And then the more I kept quiet, the more they beat me. They broke my back, they broke my chest, they smashed my head in, and I still didn't talk, and they left me for dead in the snow. So I'm still here today, and I listen to that Diane Frankenstein talk about torture. She should be put in a cell with one of the prisoners and see how well they live.
Good for you. Now, Sid, I hear you have real outrage. You know what real torture is, and you still wouldn't talk.
Stand why they allow people like Diane Frankenstein to open up that big mouth of hers and put the CIA down. If it wasn't for the CIA, this country would be in the garbage pan.
Sid, I want to ask you something. You recovered from all of your horrible torture physically. Did you ever recover from it mentally?
Not really. I've written a number of books about it. In fact, I have one book at my time in combat, which is out shortly. And I was also awarded the Legion of Honor by the French government.
Holy God. Sid, what is your name? Let's all look, check out Sid's book.
And the name of the book is My Time in Combat. I've written 20 books already.
But Sid, what's your last name?
Germansky, G-E-R-M-A-N-S-K-Y. I'm going to send you a copy.
Wait, hold on. Sid, how did you become so tough?
When I was a kid, I had to be tough. I came from the Bronx, and you had to fight every block of that you went from school. And there was one incident when I was 10 years old, and I was walking along 3rd Avenue near the Tremont Avenue, and 2 kids, black kids, came up to me. They were about 14 years of age. I was 10, a little scrawny kid. And they said, do you have any money, Jew boy? They didn't even know me. I said, I don't have no money. So they grabbed me, and they took 3 cents out of my pocket. And they started to run away. So I picked up a rock, and I heaved it as hard as I could. I hit the kid in the back of the head. I split his head open. The blood shot out of his head, and he laid on the floor. And his other...
Well, hold it. I think Eric Holder's hearing this, Sid. He's going to come at you for a racially motivated crime. Let me reverse. Because you grew up being picked on and you were scrawny, you learned to fight. But, you know, the act of throwing the rock indicates that you had a fighting spirit. No one taught you to throw that rock, did they?
No, my father was a very big man. And he told me, if somebody bills you, smile, hold your hands on your chest, and always hold these two rocks. And he gave me two rocks to carry in my pocket in school. And when he bullied me, he says, always smile. They won't know what's going to hit them. And you've got to, I'm going to take the rocks and hit them in the side of the head. And that I did that, so they stopped bullying me.
But nice, nice. You would have been a nice kid to go to school with. I could have used you at PS 42 in the Bronx.
Oh, that was at Samuel Gompers in the Bronx.
So Sid, did you have children?
Yes, I had a son and a daughter. My son.
I'm sorry, your son what?
My son passed away. He was a DVM.
Now, what is that? A doctor of veterinary medicine?
Yes.
And what did he die from? Young?
She lives in New Jersey, but she doesn't want to have anything to do with me because I remarried after my wife passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear it. But, Sid, your son died from what?
Multiple myeloma.
Oh, my God. Well, that must have taken a lot out of you. No, I understand, Sid. Listen, I know it could break a man. See, you can live through torture, but you can't live through the loss of a child. That's the greatest pain a man can suffer. Ask any psychologist, they'll tell you that. Every child that can take anything is a man who couldn't be broken by Germans who were breaking his back, and he was broken in his heart by the loss of his son. So rather than making more of this than we already have, and out of respect for Sid's emotional pain, I think we shall invite Sid on the show when his book comes out. And Sid, God bless you, man. Take care of yourself.
Thank you.
A call that was. Unbelievable to me. I mean, you know, you start a show like this, I figured we'd get some pretty bad calls of people who, you know, were punished pretty rough. But I never thought we'd get a veteran calling like that. I would say in my entire 20-year career, this has to be, in terms of a caller, I don't know how to frame it. I don't want to, you know, diminish the man's suffering by saying the most interesting, because that wouldn't have the same application to what I'm trying to say. The most astonishing call. The most remarkable call would be the correct word. The most remarkable caller of my entire life. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com.
Please have snow.
And you know, I want to take a diversion here on the show. I know many of you love this show, and many of you get the show for 2 hours, and many of you get it for three. Last night, after I signed off for 2 hours, I went into the third hour and I was totally and absolutely bored of politics. I didn't want to talk about Feinstein and torture and Boehner. I had had enough of it. So I shifted to something that I rarely do. We play jazz music behind me, saxophone music, and I read radio poems taken from my shows, meaning there's a young man, 27, who I never met. I'm not going to do it right now, who has listened to my shows over the years and taken out the essential words from my long dialogues, or monologues rather, or even sometimes dialogues, and he removes the words, and then he set them up so that they read like poems, and he captures, in other words, the jewel or the essence from the piece of coal. And then we played music and I read them, and I went for an hour on that. And the reason I'm mentioning it to those of you who didn't hear it is this. In the coming months, I will remain political. I will remain political because that's my nature. But truthfully, you're going to hear much more of the other sides of Michael Savage. Science, medicine, health, poetry, music, art, museums, dogs, food. You're going to hear it all. Because a man is made up of, a man is a sum total of all of his parts. And I'm not going to just give you one part of the pie. I got to do more than that. And, you know, politics are interesting, but there's only so much anyone can listen to it.
Savage.
Well, case in point, Italian food is not really Italian food that the average Italian ate, let's say, 150 years ago in Italy. The Italian diet then was quite sparse. It might have been a whole grain spaghetti or a whole grain noodle on the farm with some vegetables, with very little animal protein.
and perhaps some cheese products because they didn't kill the animal. But literally, they didn't slaughter the animal every time they ate a meal. And what you're eating is holiday meals three times a day, and you're getting the degenerative diseases associated with overly rich diets. It's the same with almost every other ethnic group on earth. And so you're saying Jewish food. Oh, I'm going to go to the deli and have a corned beef sandwich with a pickle. And that's not Jewish food. That is 19th century holiday Polish food. Jewish food is Yemenite food. You want to really eat Jewish food? Eat a Yemenite diet. That is the southern tip of the Arabian Peninsula. And what the Yemenites eat is what the ancient Israelites probably ate. And that's why some of us wind up with diabetes and heart attacks so young, because we're eating diets that we're not adapted to. Did you know this? You say, oh, come on, how do you know that? How do you know that? How do you know any of this stuff? I trust my doctor. He tells me to eat what I want and just take a Lipitor. And then if I get sick from any food, just take something to digest it. That's all. And if that doesn't work, they'll cut us open and remove something. All right, well, you could live that way if you want. You know what I'm saying? While the pig, the crow, the squid, and like creatures are forbidden by the Hebrew dietary laws, saturated fats, sucrose, and chemical additives are the unclean or forbidden foods in the etiology of internal health of rational man, I wrote. Page 138 of The Skeptical Nutritionist. I'm a genius. I really am. Boy, I was smart when I was young. That's really a good paragraph. Look at that one. Where the pig, the crow, the squid, and like creatures are forbidden by the Hebrew dietary laws, saturated fats, sucrose, and chemical additives are the unclean or forbidden in the etiology of internal health of rational man. That's really good stuff. And then I wrote, I support tradition, but urge my religious friends to eliminate dangerous components of their foods developed and introduced long after biblical laws were written. But it's like talking to yourself. You go to a Jewish group, they're sticking their... They're eating Stella d'Oro, a cake in their face every 2 minutes, a sweet. They wonder why they have diabetes, and they look so bad at 50-somebody. I'm serious. They've lost all concept of diet. You can't live that way. It's impossible. Some can. It is true. Some people can eat anything. I call them nutritional rogues, by the way. These are the people who you say, oh, my grandfather lived to 104. You're full of crap, Savage, because he ate everything you just said he shouldn't eat, and he drank a bottle of scotch. I said, so he's a nutritional rogue. You try it. Get back to me when you're 50. See how long you last. Right? What else did I want to tell you about? I want to read your paragraph, introduction, why I am a skeptic. Oh, this is an interesting one. I quoted Galileo, who wrote, there is no scientific work that only one man can write. Now, that was written by Galileo in the Middle Ages. Listen to this, Al Gore, you schmuck. Al Gore, schmuck. And every other putz in the academic establishment who said that all the science is in on global warming. Schmucks, idiots. You don't even know what science means, you schmucks. Here's what Galileo wrote. Putz. There is no scientific work that only one man can write, schmuck. Galileo wrote that, but Al Gore said all the science is in on global warming. And then the idiots in the media said all the science is in on global warming. They're heretics. We know the earth is flat. And anyone who says the earth is round is not a scientist, said Al Gore. And then the schmucks on MSNBC snickered and went, yeah. Introduction, why I am a skeptic. Food is such a personal thing, and how anybody can dare suggest diets for others continually shocks me. And repugnant cuisine is scarcely the road to health and long life, I wrote in 1983. One more paragraph. Let's see. Hey, oh, this is good. Now, there are fine books on becoming vegetarian. Some of my closest friends are vegetarians. That's a joke. Yet we must not seek to declare as an objective truth that the plant world holds our major key to longevity. It may be true that George Bernard Shaw, Tolstoy, Wagner, Shelley, Byron, Thoreau, and other illustrious figures were vegetable eaters, but so was Hitler. In fact, the German dictator's manic depressive mood swings and associated unexpected aggressive outbreaks might easily have been somewhat controlled with a good dose of high-quality protein and unrefined carbohydrates and with a steady intake of a good vitamin mineral supplement on a regular basis. Better, Hitler should have gnawed on a big leg of lamb once a day and had a glass of wine. The well-known photo of Hitler and Eva Braun at Berchtesgaden with the maniac passed out in an armchair after eating lunch is not an image the hypoglycemically attuned researcher is likely to forget, I wrote.
Diet and behavior vary in too many people for us to look for a simple set of rules as our salvation from too intense swings of mood. So, I mean, I wrote some nice stuff. You know, Hitler was a vegetarian and didn't drink either. And he was always starving. He could never get enough of anything because he was always hungry, so he invaded one country after another and killed too many people. As I said, if he ate a leg of lamb and had a drink once in a while, the whole course of history would have been altered. It's absolutely true. The book was way ahead of its time. 1981, Macmillan Publishing, out of print. I still own the copyright, so don't rip it off. I think I'll reprint it now. The Strategy for Designing a Nutritional Profile. It's a good book. Not for sale. Not for sale. And I want to tell you that the word food fascism, the phrase, I think I coined it on page 6. Food fascism. I was against it then. The bookstores aligned with correct diets for the unmet masses. Social engineers, you see, I was against them. And then I wrote, food fascism, like other varieties of the social disease, requires lieutenants to proselytize. Not wishing to participate in any form of totalitarianism, I wrote, I intend not to dictate a correct diet for a fictional reader. Now, if only Michelle Obama knew that. She dictates to you what you should eat, and then she eats ice cream in Martha's Vineyard. And you're not supposed to notice that. She came back 8 pounds heavier. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. The king has no clothes. We're living through it. Every day we see the victory garden that's outside the White House, and then grow your vegetables and eat good, and you're not eating right. They're going to arrest you if your child's obese, take them away from you. And every time they're on vacation, there they are in Dearborn, Michigan, and they're eating ice cream cones. What the heck? Not good for you to eat like that. Not healthy at all. You know, practice what you preach, my friend. As I said to you last week, it all the roads go back to politics. They all come and go from politics. There's nothing more political than health and nutrition. Look what Obama did to the greatest medical system in the world. So let me read you something that I remember hearing when I was a child. He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Now, what does that catchy rhyme mean? He who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. Well, it means that if you eat your way, you're getting certain nutrients which are life-giving and longevity-inducing. What is whey? It's the liquid remaining after the milk has been curdled and strained and turned into cheese. There's a liquid that remains, and it's usually discarded, I believe. Now, what's in the stuff that we throw out, called whey? Well, it's rich in so many things, riboflavin, B12, magnesium, potassium, zinc, selenium. So he who plays his fife and eats his way will live to fife another day. It's the equivalent to eating whole grains as opposed to eating white bread. It's equivalent to eating brown rice as opposed to eating white rice. You know, beriberi was rampant in Asia when they ate white rice until they found out that all of the nutrients that were being thrown out in the husk of the rice were the nutrients required to prevent, for example, rickets. You know, that's an old thing you learned in high school, probably. I don't even know if they teach that anymore. Right now, they give you a pill instead. Everything they tell you to eat garbage, live like a lab rat and take a pill. And then if you get sick, go to the quack and get 6 more pills. That's all. But those of us who actually studied foods and what's in them and want to know how to protect ourselves from disease have written books about it. So I remember, for example, there's another thing that's coming back to mind from my great book, 20, 30 years ahead of its time, called The Skeptical Nutritionist. And this was about another topic, if only I could remember it. I'm a little hungover, frankly, from last night. I went to a big dinner, took the dog, and I drank a lot of vodka. I feel great, don't get me wrong. Don't say it's hypocritical. I believe in vodka. But vodka's a health food if you don't do it every night, which I don't. So there was a subject in here that I wanted to find. Oh, I remember. It's fava bean hemolysis. I know that's not on everyone's lips. It's a disease we know nothing about. But I remember when I uncovered it, when I was writing this book, how many doctors wrote me who were ahead of their time. They said, oh my God, Savage, how did you do this? Where'd you find it? Well, I had just gotten my PhD from the University of California, and I was very just fascinated by ethnic diets. And I studied every arcane piece of literature there was, and I came up with some interesting things. And so I found this about fava beans. I've never eaten a fava bean ever since. Now, sometimes if I go in an Italian deli, you see fava beans, and they're fine if you're not, let us say, I shouldn't say allergic to them, but that's close to what I'm about to tell you. There are individuals who do not understand that they lack certain enzymes to break down the fava beans. It's called a G6PD deficiency. I know it's too technical for you, and I don't want to do it to you, but the fact is you get very sick eating fava beans. It's equivalent to acute hemolytic anemia. And you say you don't know what that is. I'm showing you what could happen when you eat certain foods that you're not aware, you're not even able to digest. For example, it's well known that Jews, most blacks, and most Asians cannot digest dairy products directly because they are deficient in the enzyme necessary to break down milk, the milk product known as lactose or milk sugar. Jews, black people, and Asians have very low amounts of lactase, so they are to avoid dairy. Did you know that? So the medical profession, instead of telling Jews, black people, and Asians, don't eat dairy, they tell them, take a pill with some lactate in it. The trick would be to avoid the dairy. Now, why would Jews, blacks, and Asians have evolved or adapted to a low dairy diets? Because there weren't high dairy diets in their traditional environs. There were just not high dairy diets. Basically, there weren't high dairy diets, so they adapted to not eating dairy, and they didn't develop the enzymes necessary to break down milk sugar. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282.
Savage.
The Savage Nation is sponsored by SwissAmerica.com, the only company I, Michael Savage, trust to buy my gold and silver from, SwissAmerica.com. I hope this song isn't offensive to some of you out there. Do I need your permission? Do I need permission from the Islamists to play White Christmas by Bing Crosby? I really hope that you won't report me to the federal authorities. Because it is Christmas time. It's also Hanukkah time. And now, if you're not Jewish, it has no meaning to you, I understand. But you're wrong. The thing about Hanukkah, which is an interesting holiday, it's for children, the Festival of Lights. But it was my adult years that I came to understand the mystical significance of the Festival of Lights. It's called the Festival of Lights. And Hanukkah celebrates the miraculous victory of the few against the many, the weak against the mighty, and the righteous against the wicked. Does that sound like today, where we're surrounded by enemies everywhere we turn? Where America, which was once the mighty, is now surrounded by enemies around the world, with enemies within the government itself? But that's not what I want to talk about. I wanted to remain positive, so I thought I'd tell you in a minute or two what the significance is of the Festival of Lights or Hanukkah. What this holiday commemorates is the rededication of the Holy Temple, during which only one day's supply of oil, holy oil, for the Temple menorah miraculously lasted 8 days. Now, what does that mean to you? It means nothing to you unless you listen to me. Here's what it could mean to you. Let's say you're down. Your moods are down. Your mood's down. You're depressed. You don't know if you can go on. You feel like you're finished. You could be the richest man on earth and be depressed tonight. In fact, many of the richest people on earth are very depressed tonight. Don't think that rich people are happy. Don't make that conclusion. Now, I know there's a statement, rich or poor, it's good to have money. I get it's my mother's statement, which was very funny in its day. But don't assume that money is happiness. Don't make that mistake for a second. Nor should you assume that all poor people are happy either. But the point is, let's say you're downtrodden and your soul is crushed and you don't know how to turn back from where you are. All right, so what does this have to do with you? The Jewish temple, the original temple, was invaded and destroyed by the enemies of the Jews a long, long time ago. They destroyed the temple. It was left in rubble. And when the small group of Jewish warriors retook the temple from the invaders, they went into the rubble and they found the holy oil that was supposed to last only one night. There was only enough oil for one night, and they lit it, and it lasted 8 nights. So what does that mean to you? The symbol to you, to any person listening, any religion or no religion, is this. No matter how wrecked you feel, no matter how you feel you are finished, deep within you, there is a small portion of miraculous holy oil in your own spirit. And you can light that oil, and it can last a very long time. If you learn where that oil is kept in the rubble of your soul,
and you could ignite that oil in some way, you may be able to reignite your entire life. So that's the story of Hanukkah to Michael Savage, the eternal flame in all of us. It's a story that I've told once a year for several years now on the program, and I do it to inspire people to pick themselves up from the rubble of their own making, by the way. And so on that note, we'll begin with the horrendous news of the world. And believe me, there's plenty of horrible news out there. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has sanctified us with his commandments and commanded us to kindle the Hanukkah light. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who performed miracles for our forefathers in those days at this time. But here's an interesting one. Blessed are you, Lord our God, King of the universe, who has granted us life, sustained us, and enabled us to reach this occasion. That's an interesting statement. Many of us don't even know that every morning that we wake up, it's a miracle. And that's another thing you should remember that religion can do for you.